Welcome to Try Not to Blink, a podcast about the ups and downs, ins and outs, news, tips, and tricks of those who live the optometry lifestyle. We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have made this podcast possible. Makers of Stellar Gas Permeable Lenses and the oh-so-incredible Custom Stable Scleral Lens. In case you're wondering, I'm on the East Coast. My name is Dr. James Diem, and I'm joined by my talented co-host, repping the West Coast, Dr. Roya Habibi. What is up, Roya?
You know, if there's nothing better to celebrate on this joyous week, this holiday week, yeah, it's that today is the best, worst day of the year, or the worst best, because it is the shortest day of the year.
Oh, really?
It is the winter solstice. December 21st is.
Okay.
So the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year. And that just means that every day from here on out is going to be a better day. Now, funny saying this here, because it's the shortest day of the year for us in the Northern Hemisphere. Very pertinent to our topic today, because those in the Southern Hemisphere, i.e. down under, it is opposite. It is their summer solstice. So,
isn't that something? Anyways. Very appropriate for today.
Very appropriate for today.
Our discussion.
But that just means, in my mind, especially in Seattle, where we're super high altitude or whatever, latitude, whatever those, maybe it's longitude. Regardless, every day from here is just a better day. Sun comes up earlier, we get more sunlight, and it's every day is better. So I feel like it's a pivot point of the winter.
Absolutely. Well, I thought you were going to mention in 1163, a hurricane of massive force hit villages in Holland. I thought you were going to talk about that.
Honestly, that was my second trip. But you know, we don't have much time, so I just wanted to streamline our conversation.
Get right to the point.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, I think, you know, you are all still just super excited about the fact that we provided a free hour of continuing education, generously sponsored and supported by Sun Ophthalmics. As you all know, Sun Ophthalmics is a maker of Sequa, Zelpros, Bromsight. And we also want to thank the support for this CE program by Regenerize. Regenerize, as you know, produces Regenerize ophthalmic solution. And so we want to say thank you to both of the sponsors for providing the means to produce this continuing education program. Roya, who is on this continuing education program and how can people get it?
Who, as in who is gracing you with knowledge,
yes,
is little us, your favorite people to listen to, obviously, why you spend any time listening to us. But we are just sharing a little bit of our knowledge and how to do some clinically applicable changes in treating your favorite disease in the world, dry eye. Favorite or not, like it or not, it's there. So anyways, we gave you some pretty obvious, easy things to integrate into your day-to-day clinic that we think are going to change both how your patients outcomes are and how you understand the disease. So hope you go over and check it out. Regardless if you listen to it, it's a super easy way to get an hour of credit. And for those of you in states where it's a year-to-year thing, you better get that baby in before the end of the year.
Yeah. It's a real fun listen, easy listen. And all you have to do is go to our website and click the Get Your CE Credit tab. So free CE up in the top right corner of trynottoblink.com and follow the directions. Real easy. Follow a little prompt to do a quick little quiz. Takes 10 minutes. You could probably do it with your eyes shut and you know, you'll get your CE credits. So real quick, I wanted to just mention, we also had a real great conversation with Dr. Addie Bauer, newest member of the Valley Contacts team. Of course, we want to give all the props to Valley Contacts for, you know, as we year end this podcast and come to an end and review our year that we've had. You know, Valley Contacts has, of course, made this podcast possible, as we always say. But one thing that, you know, is exciting that we talked about in that podcast with Addie is this new program called the Contact Lens Immersion Program, CLIP. fun, new, interactive way to really jumpstart, if you will, your contact lens, scleral lens, specialty lens program in your office. If you're new to an office or if you have an office that wants to get into this, this is a great way to get a customized in person, hopefully, way to, you know, get this process started and be very successful with this. So I think, you know, kudos to Valley Contacts and, you know, enlisting, Dr. Adeline Bauer in, you know, this effort. So check out, Contact Lens Immersion Program or CLIP, on, the valleycontacts.com website, easily accessible there. Cool. So, I had, you know, I'm always doing a little bit of a literature review before we get together. I am a proud, I have a membership to American Academy of Ophthalmology, and I get their printed journals, review them, and I like paging through them, but I also like looking at their early releases and seeing, you know, what early releases are coming out and going to be coming to print. And so a couple that I came across that I think are really interesting. This one is really, really interesting. And I'd like to have a little conversation about this. So this is a study that was just put out for early release on December 10th online. Potential functional restoration of corneal endothelial cells in Fuchs endothelial corneal dystrophy by ROCK inhibitors. And that just really kind of blew my mind. ROCK inhibitors, yeah. We all know a little bit about ROCK inhibitors now because they've been used in what, Roya?
Glaucoma.
There you go. You got it. I was hoping you would have delayed a little bit longer and I could have... poked fun at you for not doing much glaucoma, but that's smart. Fine. You do a lot
smart,
of other
I
things.
Do like to, yeah, I like to keep up my smarts. Maybe we'll avoid it, but still don't want to be dumb.
You're not dumb. Not dumb at all. Not even close, but that's, you know, just something, a little fun poking that I do every now and again. So anyway, this study looked to understand, you know, what the actual mechanism is, but also, you know, is it effective? And the results were pretty significant. The conclusions were pretty simplistic and said that the data supported the concept that the inhibition of ROCK signaling represents a tool in regenerative therapies in Fuchs. Isn't that amazing? Regeneration through the reactivation of cell proliferation and migration, as well as restoration of endothelial pump and barrier function without inducing adverse changes. So it has something to do with genetic expression and protein production of these pumps and the restoration of the barriers of the cell membranes. I mean, this is something that, you know, when I talk to patients about Fuchs, I say very simply, let me ask you, how do you explain Fuchs? And then I'll tell you what I say.
So usually I don't start explaining it until they have any symptoms, right? If they're, okay. I'll ask specifically, are you having morning symptoms? Is your vision worse in the morning?
Sure.
Maybe glare questions. But then typically I say, you know, your eye is a window. It needs to stay clear and it needs to stay compact. You have some pumps on the back that help keep it clear. And your pumps are not very good compared to people who don't have this particular problem. Okay. And eventually those pumps die off faster than they should. And your cornea can get cloudy or your window will be cloudy. You can't see as well.
Right.
That's my way of going about it.
So, I mean, I think I take a very similar approach. Maybe I'm a little more aggressive in my explanation as far as, you know, earlier, maybe, I don't know. I usually don't wait until they have symptoms, but I would like to just try and educate them about anything that I see because, again, you know, in private practice, and not that you're not in private practice, you're in practice, it's going to be doing these tests as well, but I want them to know why I'm doing certain tests. So if I'm doing a spec mic, which we do often, or pachymetry, I want to make sure I'm educating them as to why, maybe why they're getting, you know, some statement on their insurance and so on and so forth. So I want to make sure they understand that. But for me, you know, what I often say is, you know, when you're born, you get, you know, a certain number of these cells on the back of the front of your eye. And I know that's confusing to people. So I try to explain, you have this thing called the cornea, and I have little I model in my office and I say there's five layers of this right here. And the inner layer is one cell layer thick, and you get around 3,000 of these cells when you're born, and they slowly die as we age. And that happens to everybody. But some people have a hastened process there. Some of them die quicker than others, and that creates a problem. And that problem happens when fluid enters into the eye, and in specific this tissue here, and causes cloudiness, just like you were describing. So then we get into the cloudiness and the pump conversation. But I always kind of discuss like this number, and the fact that when I look into the eye, if there is a area where there are these cells that are missing, then I could see that, and we call that guttata. And we'll show them the picture on the spectral microscope. Do you guys do that?
Mm-hmm.
Beck, Mike, is that something you get into with them, talking to them about it, or is it kind of just like, well, there it is? And
no, I'll show them. I'll show them why, or basically what they're experiencing and why.
It's not a great test, right? I mean, it's not always the most accurate. It's taking a small piece of the cornea and extrapolating it, right? So
totally,
it's not the most
it's all we have.
Yeah, but it's always exactly. But it's a frustrating condition is ultimately where I want to get with this. It's a frustrating condition because in many cases, it can cause pretty severe vision loss. Now with the advent of, DSEC and DMEC and all that kind of stuff, I think there are some really great treatments available. But in places like where I'm at, it's difficult to get someone to do those things. For us, we need to send somebody a couple hours to get that kind of thing done. Does somebody do it in your office?
We got two, depending on the time of year, I suppose you could say. But no, I mean, it is a luxury to be in the middle of a city. And, I do find too that a lot of my docs, I'll see it. It'll be relatively bad, maybe some early symptoms. I think it looks bad, but one pearl I've learned is oftentimes the surgeon's not going to do anything until they're truly symptomatic,
right?
And truly more findings. So we've gotten less excited about it more recently.
Okay.
So not that I don't manage it, but
right.
Anyway, this like is really cool. A treatment that's not a surgery, potential treatment that's not a surgery. And a lot of times we think glaucoma drops, we think, oh, it's going to make your cornea worse. That's typically the surface of the cornea. But to think that a glaucoma medication could make the cornea better, that's pretty cool to think about. So,
and to be clear, this isn't a approved glaucoma medicine. It is, however, a Rho kinase inhibitor, as is, other medicines out there. But this is not, this is not Rocklatan or Ropressa. It's not the medicine in there, but it's a something similar, I assume. But anyway, so this is kind of neat. Muro 128 is the least exciting medicine that we offer patients, period. Give them something else, I think that would be pretty cool. So
yeah, anyway, no, I think honestly, I think, who knows, maybe this was like an incidental finding from like maybe a
that's what doc I was wondering.
Noticing that patients were taking a ROC inhibitor, they were noticing a change in or a lessening of their, or less of a progression, and then maybe I don't know, I have no idea.
Weird.
But it is cool to see how we can how science progresses.
So one last thing, and then we're going to get into the really important meat and potatoes. The association between keratoconus and BMI. So this is a cross-sectional population-based study that was just published December 9th, 2020, American Journal of Ophthalmology. I want to ask you, before you look at this, do you have any preconceived notion as to whether or not there is a connection between BMI and keratoconus? Just thinking from your own patient base.
I mean, I want to say probably if I really thought about the answer, there's probably proportionally more people that have keratoconus that are overweight than are normal weight. Yeah. But I don't know. That's also unbiased because I just heard the title.
You read it. Yeah. And
I didn't read it yet, but I think that probably it's more likely to have.
It's not going
to
be low BMI, right?
But I think about all my patients, sure, I have plenty of normal weighted patients that have keratoconus. But yeah. I think that there are a decent amount of overweight. But granted, right. like also, this is just an association, right? There are plenty of people in the United States that are overweight.
Exactly. So how do you filter that out? And I think they did try to do that. But interestingly, this is not done in the United. The study was done in Israel. So, and it's interesting because it was a population-based study of candidates for military service in Israel attending the draft board in 2006-2014 that underwent an ophthalmological exam. So it's just, it is an interesting cohort. I'll say for myself, when I read it, I was like, really? And I thought about it and I'm saying to myself, yeah, you know, I don't really think I have that association like in my brain. I would not have said that. Now, I will say that, you know, I do have a number of patients that are obese, you know, that have keratoconus. But then on the flip side, like you said, I have a bunch of patients that are obese and don't have keratoconus. So it's hard to say, you know, that there's an actual correlation there. And that it means anything. And certainly this study kind of says that, you know, but it does say that the prevalence of keratoconus was 164 cases per 100,000 over time. Well, no, let me get to the meat and potatoes here. The study provides strong evidence regarding the independent association between BMI and keratoconus. Overweight and obese adolescents have higher odds for having keratoconus compared to normal weight. BMI should be considered as a risk factor for keratoconus, and further research should elucidate how obesity is involved in the progress of keratoconus. So it's pretty strong, you know, words, actually, I think.
Yeah. Intriguing. Very intriguing.
All right, guys, we are so excited because we're jumping right in to the conversation, the meat and potatoes of tonight, today, this morning, whatever time you're listening to this wonderful podcast with our guest. And as the title suggests, the OD from Down Under, the doctor that many of you have heard of in Australia. Yes, there are eyeballs in Australia. No, I'm just kidding. So we have Dr. Lee Plowman with us this today here in December. Very excited. And, you know, Lee and I have had some banter back and forth on Facebook, and he's been very kind to reach out to me about a really cool project he has going on to hook up at-need patients for dry eye with dry eye providers. So want to definitely talk about that. But really, I just want to know, what is going on in Australia? I mean, is it true? Are there kangaroos jumping all over the place? Do they really ask you as soon as you get off the plane, can you put another shrimp on the bobby? I mean, tell me all about it. I'm so excited.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much, Jimmy and Roy. Thank you for having me. Yes, there's not too far from the airport, there's kangaroos. And
good check. All right. One thing proven correct. Good.
Yes.
What about the shrimp on the barbie?
We tend not to. We tend to like cooking other things more, like sausages, hamburgers, onions.
Okay. No shrimp on the barbie.
No.
Do you say barbie?
Yeah, we say barbie. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good enough for me. Check. It's true. All right. Good. Well, you've just made all of my dreams a reality. So thank you, Lee. I really do appreciate that. You know, tell us a little bit about optometry, okay, in Australia. I think that that is something that we would all like to know about. I actually had a professor at optometry school that was from one of the schools in Australia, and my God, was she just beyond her game as far as optics and BV, just really intense into that stuff. And she was a PhD, OD. OD, PhD, whatever. That's my only knowledge of optometry in Australia. So can you give us
also, a little bit? I would say like the Australia party is like my only experience.
That's right. The Australia, but that's what
that's like a big deal at, is that Academy, right? Or is it, I don't
Academy,
remember what meeting
it is. That's right.
Yes.
The Australia, sorry?
The Australian Academy, party.
The Australia party, which is a party that the Australians throw at Academy usually every year, which is always a rager.
It's a big deal. It's actually started by Brian Holden. Brian Holden started it. And that just kept going on year after year. Yeah. So they just play like pictures of kangaroos jumping around like up on a big screen. And then there's like just
they bring in live dingoes and stuff.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
I'm just kidding.
There's shrimp on barbies. Yeah. It's good. All right. Go ahead. Tell us about optometry in Australia.
Yeah. Well, optometry in Australia, it's very similar to America.
Okay.
Except I've got a ton of respect for American ODs. I think you guys do a fantastic job, holistic approach. And yeah, I look to doctors like yourselves as thought leaders in the US. So there's definitely new techniques that you guys are that you're doing that things like lasers and other treatments are like, wow, that's amazing stuff.
That's exciting. So tell us a little bit about school. Okay, so that I think that's where it all starts, right? So, you know, for you, I see you have two eyes and you also have glasses. What's your refractive error, Lee?
I'm a plus six.
What? Woo! Holy hyperopia, Batman. That's a lot of plus, brother.
Yes. My grandma was a plus nine. So it's, it really runs in the family.
Wow. And what about contacts? Ever contacts or no contacts?
Yeah, had contacts for many years, but unfortunately got dry eyes myself. So yeah, just on glasses now.
Uh-huh.
But when I was a student, everyone loved to do gonioscopy on me. They're like, Lee, let me do some gonio on you.
There's no angle there. There's nothing. There's no angle. It's just iris and whatever's next, cornea. I don't know. No angle. So you were in so you go to school as a youngster in Australia. Are you from Australia originally? Like family lineage? Is that how it works? Are lots of people from there always been there? How does it work?
Yes, yeah, from Australia originally, way back, Scotland, from Scotland.
Really?
A little bit of European history. So yeah.
Is that what a lot of people can sort of date themselves back to, like some sort of somebody came there at some point in time, and that's okay. What about so is that common, Scottish? Is that or Scotland? Is that common or not common?
Yeah, fairly common. It's there's a few people. Yeah, England, Scotland, Ireland. Yeah, it's a good mix of European people.
Okay, interesting. And so then you go to school. What's school like? Like grade school, high school? What's that like there?
It's actually interesting because I did the first, we call it primary school, up to grade six, and then a little bit of high school. But I actually partway through, my dad got a job over in Portland, Oregon.
Get out!
I got to move over there with my family, and we did junior high in Portland, Oregon.
Wow! Very cool. I thought there was something crunchy about you. Now I get it. Nice. So, and you left there then after that, and
yes,
went back to the motherland.
We did, yeah, just because of the college, my dad wanted to try and get us into a college back here just to, for cost reasons. But, we were some great friendships in America and, still people that we keep in contact with as well.
Oh, neat. So then you finish your high school in Australia, and then what?
Yes.
What happens next?
I did 1 year of science engineering. And then transferred across to optometry school after that, because that's, I wanted to be sure that I was going into a more specialized field. So just glad to, transfer across. So I went to, University of Melbourne, and my class was actually the first class. It was a four-year bachelor degree, and they went to a five-year degree so that they could incorporate ocular therapeutics as well.
Cool. Very fantastic. Cool. And so that was the degree that you did. That was your program.
Yes. Awesome.
Very cool. And I think that's from what I did a little bit of research, it seems like that's one of the most well-known programs. Would you say that would you say it's the best?
I really respected the lecturers. There's a great experience there at University of Melbourne. It's one of the three East Coast schools that happened before any other schools developed. So,
Did I hear you just say that Queensland is not very good, and neither is University of Canberra?
we tend to beat them in football. So yes, happy to say that.
So there is there six programs? Is that accurate?
Yes, that sounds right. Yeah.
Okay. And so do you guys interact at all? Do you have like optics competitions? Do you, I don't know, what is there any sort of communication or anything between the schools? Is there associations that put you together, anything like that?
Yeah, we've got a group of young optometrists. So they're a subcommittee of the main optical optometry Australia. And yeah, they do a great job learning more about the profession and developing their leadership skills. So, they organise events, catch ups, meets at conferences. So, yeah, they do a great job.
Awesome. So go ahead,
just Maya, to clarify, when for optometry in Australia, it's a undergraduate degree or master's degree. So you said a 4-year or 5-year. Like, tell me about that a little bit. So you go to university to learn optometry, right?
Yeah, so now it's actually changed since I graduated. There's two, at least in my state, the state of Victoria, there's now two courses. One school is a 3.5-year accelerated degree, and you come out with a master's of optometry.
Cool. Okay.
And the other option is now an OD degree. So that's a degree like you'd be familiar with. You do a 3-year degree and then 4-year postgrad degree.
They squeeze some more money out of you, basically for no reason, probably. But yeah, anyway, what are you going to do? Cool. Well, very neat. It's a progress is key, and education is key for all those battles we talked about, certainly. So, okay, good. And so then you finish, and then what do? So first of all, you got six schools. How many about students would you say are in the program each year in each one of those schools?
Yeah, interesting. So when in my class, when we finished, there was 45 students.
Okay. Small programs.
And then, yeah, probably the other local program would be up towards maybe 90 students per year.
Oh, okay. Pretty good size. Okay, so then you graduate, and then what do you do?
So I went off to work in an independent private practice. And I got to travel between three different locations around the Melbourne area. So there was two that were fairly suburban, a typical suburban clinic, and one of them was a regional clinic. And that's where you have no full-time ophthalmology, and it's much more therapeutics biased over there.
Okay. So, and then what about the suburban clinic? What does that look like?
Yeah, one of those was fairly close to Melbourne. So that tended to be a bit more spectacles, contact lenses, that sort of focus. And the other one, just a completely different dynamic in the more of the northern suburbs of Melbourne. And yeah, I'd say you could feel it. When you move between the practices, you could feel the vibe, the culture of the practice different between one to the other.
Sure, sure. I could say that's true here, right, Roya? You can have...
Totally. Practice, I have a practice that are 7 miles apart, whatever that is in kilometers. They're totally different personalities. So, different neighborhoods, they all have different personalities.
True, true. So just in general, I could kind of classify the way that, optometrists in the United States go to, retail, private practice, ophthalmology, group practices. Those are sort of broad classifications. And certainly within each one of those classifications, they may do a spread of work, just like what you just described, either, mainly glasses, contacts, maybe therapeutics, maybe some specialty things. So is that true for, Australia also, or is it different?
Yeah, they're very similar mix of practices. You might have some practices who have a heavy pediatric vision therapy focus. Some have more of a contact lens focus. We're starting to see, following America's lead, that we're starting to do more of the medical model as well. And that's where dry eye treatments are starting to come into play.
Let's get into it, Lee. Wait,
really quickly, a question. Because every country is a little different when it comes to insurance stuff.
Yes, and very
obviously
important.
That's how we, you know, at least in the States, where most of our money realistically
live
comes
and die
from.
By it, yeah.
Yeah. What is that like in Australia? I mean, is that a similar thing? You know, whatever. Go with that.
Sure. Yeah, one of the key differences is that everyone in Australia, if you're a citizen or permanent resident, you have Medicare, which is a similar name to what you guys have. But it covers everyone. So this system covers the consultations. So they'll pay a rebate towards the initial consultation, visual fields, and foreign body removal, even something like for if you're over +5, -5, they'll also cover contact lens fittings as well.
Cool. That's pretty good.
What about, do you mind sharing how much they provide for a regular examination, like a regular exam?
Yes, and the rebates have been were frozen for quite a while, so they've definitely been out of pace with the real cost of business. So they're around about the $58, $59 mark, Australian dollars. So it'd be probably around maybe $45.
Okay, and is it the same for ophthalmology? In other words, you know, would they be getting the same rebate for the same exam?
No, they tend to get, I think a typical rebate, they get rebates for laser, maybe $200. Sure. Even the consult, they might get maybe $130 back.
Listen, Lee, that's bullshit. I'm just saying it right now. I don't care who gets mad at me for saying it. I'm sorry. You know, is this one of the things you guys are pushing back on? Not the laser thing, but you know, that's a different procedure, but just the consultation. Cause this is something that we fight for too, you know, for the same, cause we have codes. I don't know if you have the codes, right? So you put a code in. If I do the same thing for the same code and somebody else does the same thing for the same code, there might be a difference in how much is paid. And I'd probably do a better job. I'm just kidding. That's not true. It's not true. It's not factual. I take that back, but you should be paid the same thing for the same work. I agree.
Absolutely. Yeah. For the amount of work and the time that ODs spend with patients, it's the rebate is, or the insurance is definitely out of step with the work that we do.
Totally. So what about OCTs, visual fields? How does that work?
Yes, so we can claim similar amount for a visual field, so around about $45.
Is there a limit to how many times you could do one in a year?
Yes, so we can do two, for both eyes, we can do two visual fields per year.
Okay, and what about an OCT?
No rebates for OCTs.
Wow. What about for ophthalmologists?
Good question. I'm pretty sure that's still a private pay as well.
Really? Wow. Very interesting. Mm. Very interesting. So, so let me ask, is it common for a OD to have an OCT? Is that common? Not common? It is.
Yes. Yeah. Very, OCTs are almost reaching saturation now in Australia.
Okay. Totally. And so that means, do you have one then, or?
No, we don't. I had one at my, the practice that I first started at. But it's something that we'd love to be able to offer patients.
Awesome. That's fantastic. So your passion, from what I understand and from what I've seen and everything that you do, is dryness, dry eye. So you already told us a little bit about your history. Do you mind give us a little bit more information about, you know, where that started and how that grew?
Yeah, sure. So when I started in private practice, going back, I first started working 2007, that was when I was first on the private practice area. And I remember looking to seeing patients with dry eyes, talking to them about it, and just feeling frustrated that, you know, I was trying to find the perfect drop for them. Like, here you go, I can give you this drop. It's going to make your life so much better.
Yes. Do you find it yet? Still waiting on it. Still waiting.
Absolutely. I think there's even a song about that. Still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Oh, wow. Can you sing it for us?
Yeah, but just that, just trying to get compliance from patients, could, hoping for the best for them and just wishing for compliance is just a real uphill battle. And since then, trying to look, step back a bit and say, okay, what else can we do to help you? Having dry eyes myself, I wanted to be able to, offer some of that firsthand experience to patients to offer empathy for them, try and take photos and explain the condition to them so that they feel empowered, and then we can step forwards from there.
Totally. Awesome. So you created a directory of sorts. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So this directory, because I wanted patients, some people look online for answers, like Dr. Google or just trying to talk to a friend or catch up with someone who's got a similar condition. And for those people to try every single thing on the list, just experimenting for themselves and hoping that it'll work, I wanted to try and attract those people to be able to connect, first of all, to inform them so that they learn more about their condition, and then connect them to a local dry eye expert who can really take them along the journey.
I think it's a great idea. And I think, you know, you've heard more of this happening. You know, the difficult thing with this, Lee, I think every company, not every company, but lots of companies, lots of organizations, lots of associations sort of dangle this in front of you. You know, they say, well, you know, get this or do this, you know, get an OCT or start providing IPL or start providing, you know, thermal pulsation, whatever. And we're going to put you on our Doctor Finder website. Right. And I think it's a wonderful thing. I say, absolutely, I want to be part of that. But, you know, the difficult thing I think is always, how the heck do you get the patients to look at the Doctor Finder in the first place? Right. Yes. You know, so what kind of things are you doing to make that a reality, to make this something that people are able to access, and have you had any success yet? How can we help?
Yes, absolutely. So the key is to try and meet people where they are. And so they're Googling things, and we've had some great results so far. So now if you Google dry eye treatment on Google USA, you'll see dry eye directory pop up on number 4 on Google. And you'll see it on and Google Australia as well. And also it's becoming more prominent in other countries as well.
Wow. Cool. So, and what are you doing? Are you trying to engage Google through search engine optimization, or what are you doing?
Yes. So I help independent practices with their SEO. So using some of those ideas, and then I work on the directory website to build the SEO, building more links to the website, and making the website attractive to Google.
Well, where the heck did you learn to do that, Lee?
It started back in this private practice. Working in there, I was mainly in one. After moving between the 3 practices, I just went to the 1, and the owners weren't in that practice. And they're like, I wanted to do a good job for them. So as an employee, I wanted to help them to grow their business even when they weren't there. So I was like, okay, what can we do to help grow this small private practice? And that's where this interest in marketing came, and look, especially online marketing, that's where it's all started, from private practice.
Yeah.
You know, shocking what we can teach ourselves, right? With a little effort. And I love this is
did you kind YouTube of, it?
Yeah. Google YouTube. No, I love the idea of whatever you do, you know, leaving a place, or whether you're still there or not, but leaving a place better than you started. You know, you go in, whether that was your, you know, subline role of what your responsibility was to do there, but you leave something better than you started. Even with this dry eye directory is a great idea, because you're treating dry eye. I'm sure you're not wanting to send people away from you, but realistically, for the cause, it's the big picture. And I think that's awesome. For people who are interested, first of all, I'm going to link this. So there's a shout out for your SEO, get more people linking you. But also, A, like, how do you know? Do someone just get to submit and say, I want to be added to your directory? Or how can a patient trust that the person you're linking is truly providing a comprehensive care for dry eye specifically?
Sure. So with dry eye, there's no official international association of dry eye specialists at this stage. So we look to try and gauge someone's interest by some of the things that they're doing day to day. So that might be some of the gear that they have, some of the tests that they do. So we've set up the dry eye directory to be based on people who've made a significant investment in dry eye. So maybe they've got an IPL, or they've got Lipiflow. Some of those two key things that they've invested in is one of the things that we're looking to really show people that these are really keen dry eye experts.
Very cool.
Fantastic. Yeah, no. So what, so people can they reach out to you to get on the list? Is that a possibility or?
Yeah, absolutely. The dry eye directory is totally free for practitioners and patients. So, people are welcome to email me and we can get you set up on the list.
Fantastic. That is absolutely fantastic. Tell me a little bit about your glasses. I see you have some glasses on right now. They're +6, which, you know, I see the hyperopia. It's all good. I'm not judging. And I could see you got a little something going on there. So can you tell me a little bit about your frames and what you got going on?
Yes. So COVID and the mask has been a real strain for me. Mask-associated dry eye is definitely a real thing. Yeah. Don't know if you have you guys found that as well?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's driving everybody nuts. And I love, you know, the data on airflow and lash length. You know, I love that data, and just that there is some normal airflow dynamics that occur with lash length. And so naturally, if you're totally redirecting the way that air blows up to your eye, I think that's going to alter that, right? So not that we have any true data to support why it is, but I think we can all kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together, and I definitely see it. And it just pisses people off, right? You know, just wearing a mask pisses people off. So a good thing we support it, just saying that. But so what are you doing to help with that for yourself at least?
Yeah, so these are I'm wearing my Ziena Oasis glasses. Okay. So we've got the silicon gasket on there. And that's been a real game changer for me, trying to get through wearing a mask all day, every day. It's been a real help. And the lenses themselves are, because they sit so close to the eye, they need to be anti-fog. So I use the Essilor Optifog lenses.
And have you noticed an improvement with that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great. This particular frame tends to suit about 80% of people, so it's been a really good fit. And
are you offering that to lots of patients right now? Is that something that you're offering to lots of people?
Yeah, so we actually, my employer has a e-commerce store, and he's the Australian distributor for 7Eye Ziena products. So we sell to patients all around Australia who are keen to get the dry eye glasses.
What are they called? Ziena?
Ziena.
Ziena.
Ah, I see.
I had a patient, actually, this was probably 6 months ago, alert me to this type of frame. And I was almost embarrassed. Like, we have a good amount of, you know, dry eye product in my office for people and convenience and whatnot. But for those who are still trying to grasp what we're talking about, these are glasses that have essentially a moisture chamber, you know, cup attached to the back end, and they look chic. Like, you cannot see that cup.
Yeah,
if you don't see it in the right angle. They look really sharp. Yeah. And the frame options that they have, there's several options. I mean, this isn't an ad, but seriously, it's actually a really undorky version of what this truly is. It looks nice.
So do you do well with them in the office? Do you find that they're, you know, accepted? People seek them out? What do you think?
Yeah, usually patients just see me from the front and don't really, they just see them as normal glasses. It's only if I turn to the side that you can see the silicone on the side. And they just see them as, oh, Lee, you're wearing safety glasses. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Right.
Extra safety from, you know, the C word, corona.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, it's actually our association said you need to wear protective eyewear too. So it's, yeah, good to be able to do that.
There you go.
Fantastic. What is, on a different note, what is the world like in Australia with the C word? What's it like there? You know, first off, I want to hear what you think of what it's like in America. I want to hear what you think from your perspective about what's going on in America. Let's hear it. I won't judge you either.
No, give it to us. Give it to us.
Come on. We need to hear it. We need to hear it. Say it out loud. He doesn't want to say anything. He's afraid.
I do feel sad for you guys. It seems like it feels like that there could have been such a much more of a coordinated, bigger response. It just, yeah, really saddens me all that everything that's happening.
Wow.
Totally.
Yeah. Real talk. My heart to hear that, you know, sad. I mean, we're so disillusionedly. I mean, it's just, you know, you're in the middle of it and you just, you know, this American pride is something that we love very dearly. And, you know, you can't strip it from us, but you know, it's literally killing us in some respects. So, you know, we'll probably piss some of our listeners off even just by saying that. And it's good and bad, but that's just the reality. It's what it is. It's, I guess, part of what it is to be an American. But what do you, what's gone on there? Tell us about your, you know, how has it happened, you know, from March on? What's it been like?
We've had, in the state of Victoria where I'm in now, we've had two lockdowns since March. So, yeah, I think the lockdowns themselves have been one of them, definitely the most restrictive in our country, but also probably equally restrictive to some of the other most strict countries around the world.
Can you tell us what that means? So, like, for us, it means, you know, just do whatever the hell you want.
wear a mask.
Yeah, and also don't even wear a mask. It's fine. I'm just kidding. That's not true. And I'll say, as we're joking around about COVID, you know, I've said it before on the show. I had my aunt passed away from COVID. You know, I have seen lots of folks suffer significantly. Mm-hmm. I think it's real. I don't think it's funny. I think, you know, we need to be serious. So, you know, we're talking lightly, but I definitely don't think it's a light topic, and neither does Roya. So, you know, that's important just to say. So anyway, go ahead. Tell us about exactly what does that mean to be locked down? Because Roya's lockdown was different than my lockdown, you know, in the United States. So what was yours like in Victoria, Australia?
Sure. So the in the capital city, Melbourne, and a bunch of surrounding areas, they were locked down to they could only travel about 3 miles from their home. I could only go out to exercise for half an hour to an hour per day.
America, you couldn't do that. I'm just telling you.
And 8 p.m. curfew as well.
Night curfews.
No way. I mean, it would never. Am I right, Roya? Am I right?
It would be really hard to enforce, but it's just like, I feel like in America, people, because the government doesn't get involved that often, they just can't fathom them getting those sort of rules, you know? Yeah.
So how was it accepted? I mean, I don't think everybody's just like, okay, let's follow, you know, what they're saying, right? I'm sure you had some pushback. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah, definitely. We had had protests, people protesting against wearing a mask or protesting against the lockdowns. And
all right.
Yeah.
Not that much different in that regard.
The problem, though, is Australia has as many people as what, like, California has, maybe less, population-wise. So yes.
a whole country.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's easier to maybe implement some of these things. Maybe. I mean, it's still people. Still gonna deal with it.
Yeah, that's it. So I practice in a regional area, and I ask patients, so how's lockdown been for you? You know, what's it been like? Some patients struggled with it. But others are like, oh no, I've got a dairy farm. I've got 1,000 acres. It's just me and the cows. It's great.
Yeah, just me and the cows. I love
my
it.
My preference.
Yeah, it's the same as it always has been. I just saw in the news that New Zealand, correct me if I'm wrong, New Zealand said, you know, we're done. We beat it. We're good. Is that accurate? What happened there? Do you know anybody from New Zealand? Have you ever been there? What's it like? Are there hobbits there? Tell me more.
Yes, I can't verify about hobbits, but it's an amazingly beautiful country from what I've heard. Some of my good friends are from there, but yeah, they decided to completely lock the country down, even probably a little bit stricter than Australia did. Wow. And they did an amazing job. Just they beat the virus, no cases for many. I think even a couple of months.
Really?
But wow. they managed to be some maybe an international traveler who came in, and they did have a few cases developed from that.
Okay.
I believe.
Wow. Yeah. Very, very interesting. Well, Lee, I want to say, you know, thank you from the bottom of our, you know, spoiled American hearts. I mean that in the best possible way, of course, you know, for your time and for your passion and dedication to the profession of optometry, you know, internationally. And, you know, I think it's pretty neat that we have this opportunity to chat with you and move this profession forward. It's so different, so many different parts of the world, but, you know, really the need is great. And I think we all know that. So we're all working hard to try and make it better, you know, and for everything that you do for your community and your patients. So if you want to know more about your website, you know, I think, you know, Roy, you said you're going to post all that in the show notes so that people can look into that and reach out to Lee. I know you're on Facebook and you're active on OS Docs, but how can people get in touch with you if they want to, you know, chit chat with you, Lee?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much. The best way to get into contact, you can jump on to dryeyedirectory.com or email Lee, LEIGH, at dryeyedirectory.com. And we can chat more from there. But yeah, Jimmy and Roy, thank you so much for having me today. Thank you for all the things that you do to promote optometry, that you're really helping us to step up, to expand the scope of optometry and, yeah, to grow the collegiality. So really appreciate you guys. Thanks so much for your leadership.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Awesome.
Boom. That just happened.
Well, that's it. Before we go, reach out to us for feedback, questions, stories, things you want us to talk about, either through email or on our Instagram or Facebook. We never depart without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for their support, both for the amazing lenses they make and the great people they are to work with. And be sure and tune in and listen to our next episodes. But until then, try not to blink.